This happened back in 2021. I'm a photographer, and I'd been backpacking through Eastern Europe for a couple of weeks, snapping photos of crumbling architecture, getting lost on purpose, and discovering those out-of-the-way spots that make travel feel like real exploration. It was exactly what I'd wanted, a change of pace, a fresh perspective for my photography. I'd been mostly sticking to hostels and catching cheap local buses when I needed to cover a lot of ground. For the most part, everything had gone smoothly. But there was one day I'll never forget, and not in a good way. I was in a small town in Romania, somewhere a little off the usual tourist track, and I'd decided to head over to a city about an hour and a half away to meet up with some friends who were passing through. The town was quiet, picturesque, with narrow streets and houses that looked like they'd been untouched for centuries. I figured I'd catch a cab since I'd already walked most of the morning with my camera gear, and I didn't feel like waiting for the next bus. I asked around, and eventually I got a number for a local driver. I called, and within about 10 minutes, this small beat-up car pulled up in front of me. The driver was an older guy, maybe in his 50s, with a rough, scruffy look to him, wearing a worn leather jacket and a thick mustache that covered most of his mouth. His face was weathered, and his eyes were sharp, darting up and down the street as if he was suspicious of something. "Are you going to Sibiu?" I asked, leaning toward the open window. He jerked his thumb toward the back seat. "Yes, get in." From the get-go, there was just something weird about him, but I didn't make a big deal of it. I told myself he was just a local who maybe wasn't used to tourists. And in a way, that was exactly what I was looking for, an authentic experience. So I got in, tossed my bag beside me, and settled in for the ride. But then, about 30 minutes in, he suddenly took a turn off the main road. I looked up, a little surprised, and noticed we were now on a dirt path leading into a dense patch of forest. Is this a shortcut?" I asked, even though my gut instinct was telling me something was wrong. He nodded without looking at me. "Yes, shorter way," he said, his voice flat. He didn't elaborate. I looked out the window. The trees were getting thicker, and the path seemed less like a road and more like a trail that rarely saw any traffic. The main road had disappeared from view entirely, leaving nothing but dense forest around us. "Are you sure this goes to Sibiu?" I asked, a little louder this time, hoping he'd reassure me with a quick answer, maybe a friendly laugh, anything to make this feel less like a scene from a horror movie. The driver didn't answer right away. Instead, he looked at me in the rearview mirror, his eyes unreadable. "Faster way," he repeated as he kept driving. I was beginning to panic. I tried to keep it under control, telling myself he probably knew the area better than I did. But every mile we drove, the forest seemed to close in around us. Finally, I couldn't take it anymore. "Look," I said, my voice shaking a bit, "I'd really rather stick to the main road. If you could just turn back." "No turning back now," he interrupted, his voice hard. He didn't look at me, his gaze fixed straight ahead. I was scared now, real fear settling in. The dirt path was barely wide enough for a single car, with thick underbrush on either side. We were deep into the woods, with no sign of civilization, no houses, no other cars. I tried again, this time with a firmer tone. "I'd like to get out here. Just stop the car, please." The driver didn't respond. Instead, he kept his foot steady on the gas, his face set in a determined, almost cold expression. I was practically glued to my seat, running through my options, but none of them looked good. The only thing I could think to do was grab my phone, but when I tried, he looked back, his eyes catching mine in the mirror. "Phone won't help you out here," he said, almost as if he'd read my mind. We drove on for another 5 minutes, the path narrowing even more, until suddenly he pulled the car to a stop. We were in a small clearing surrounded by trees so thick you couldn't see more than a few feet in any direction. My pulse was racing, and every instinct was screaming at me to get out, to run. The driver looked back at me. He leaned over slightly, his voice low and firm. "You need to run," he said, his tone leaving no room for argument. "Run now." For a second, I thought I hadn't heard him right. "What?" I stammered, not sure if he was serious or if this was some kind of twisted joke. "Run," he repeated, "and don't look back." I didn't wait to be told a third time. I threw open the door, my bag still clutched in one hand, and bolted into the trees. Branches scratched my arms, my legs tripped over roots, but I kept going, fueled by pure adrenaline. I could hear my own breathing, harsh and panicked, echoing through the silence as I tore through the forest, expecting to hear footsteps behind me. But there was nothing, just silence. Eventually, I slowed, my chest heaving as I leaned against a tree to catch my breath. I had no idea how long I'd been running or where I was, but I knew one thing. I wasn't going back to that clearing. After what felt like hours, I managed to find a road. It wasn't the one I'd started on, but it was paved, and a kind couple eventually picked me up and took me to the nearest town. Later, I learned from locals that drivers sometimes tested tourists, playing games with them, just to see how they'd react. I don't know if that's what happened to me, but I'll never forget that driver's eyes in the mirror or the finality in his voice when he told me to run. To this day, I still wonder if I was just another tourist he'd toyed with, or if he'd actually saved me from something lurking out there in the woods. And even now, whenever I think about that ride, a chill creeps over me, reminding me how quickly things can turn in a place you don't understand. I've always loved the flexibility of being a freelance designer. It lets me travel, set my own schedule, and gives me the freedom to work from wherever I want. So, last year I decided to spend a month working remotely in a small town I'd found online. It looked like something out of a storybook, with charming old buildings, cobblestone streets, and views that were way too pretty to miss. I figured a little change of scenery would be a good escape from my usual routine and might spark some new creativity. After scrolling through listings, I found this quaint Airbnb run by a local man named Stefan. The place had rave reviews, all of them praising Stefan's hospitality and the quiet, scenic location. The photos of the rental looked cozy, with warm, vintage decor that gave it that home away from home feel. Everything about it seemed perfect, so I booked it without a second thought. When I arrived, Stefan was waiting outside to greet me. He was a tall, slim guy in his 50s with a welcoming smile and a calm demeanor. He shook my hand warmly and helped me carry my bags inside, giving me a quick tour of the place. I remember thinking how thoughtful it was of him to go out of his way to make me feel comfortable. The house was even better in person, a little rustic but charming, with lace curtains, creaky wooden floors, and antique furniture. Stefan pointed out a few local spots, recommending some nearby cafes and trails, and said he'd be available if I needed anything. The first few days were honestly a dream. I'd work on my projects in the mornings and then spend my afternoons exploring the town, wandering through little shops and sampling local dishes. Stefan's place was just as cozy as it looked online, and I settled in quickly, treating it like my own home. But then little things started feeling kind of weird. At first, I'd catch glimpses of movement outside the window, like someone was walking by. The first time, I figured it was just a neighbor or someone passing by. But it kept happening, these fleeting shadows that would stop just as I looked up, and the figure would disappear around the corner. One afternoon, I finally saw who it was. Stefan was standing outside, not on the sidewalk, but close to the window, looking in. When he noticed me staring back, he gave a little wave and pointed toward the garden as if he'd just been checking the plants or something. "Everything all right?" I asked, stepping outside to meet him. "Oh, yes," he replied smoothly. "Just making sure everything is in good shape. Don't mind me." He smiled, the same friendly smile from before, but something about it felt strange. It was like he was observing me, not just the house. I brushed it off, telling myself he was probably just being friendly, making sure I was settled in. But over the next few days, it happened again. Those quick looks through the window, him moving past so quietly that I wouldn't have noticed if I hadn't looked up. Every time he'd give that same polite smile, nod, and move on. It was odd, but I told myself it was probably just a quirk, maybe a small town thing I didn't understand. One night, a week or so into my stay, I fell asleep working late on a project. I woke up around 2 a.m., still at the small desk in my room. The house was quiet, and all the lights were off except for the dim glow from my laptop. Groggy, I stood up, stretched, and was about to get into bed when I felt an odd sensation. a kind of prickling awareness, like someone was nearby. That's when I noticed the faintest shadow under my door, like someone was standing right outside in the hallway. My heart jumped and I held my breath, listening, but there was nothing, just silence. Curious but uneasy, I slowly tiptoed toward the door, pressing my ear against it, straining to hear anything. For a few seconds, there was only silence, and then a quiet shuffle, like a foot moving against the wooden floor. I wanted to believe it was just my imagination, or maybe the creaking of an old house, but that shadow was still there, faint but unmistakable, lingering outside my door. Steeling myself, I called out, "Hello?" The shadow didn't move at first. Then, slowly, it shifted, and I heard a soft knock. My mind raced through a dozen explanations, none of them reassuring. I opened the door a crack, just enough to see who it was. Standing there in the dim light of the hallway was Stefan. He was dressed in his usual clothes, but something about him looked different, his posture, his expression. His eyes had this glazed-over look, unfocused, like he was in a trance or somewhere else entirely. "Oh, you're awake," he said, a little too cheerfully, as if he'd expected me to be asleep. "I was just, checking in, making sure you're comfortable." His voice was friendly, but the way he looked at me wasn't. It felt cold, almost predatory. "Stefan, it's 2 in the morning, I said, trying not to freak out. "Why are you checking on me now?" He blinked, his gaze sharpening as if he just realized the time. "Oh, I didn't mean to wake you," he replied, brushing it off. "I just thought I heard a noise, that's all." Forced a polite smile, but inside, all I wanted was to slam that door shut. "I'm fine, thanks," I said, hoping he'd get the hint. But he lingered, his eyes drifting past me as if he was looking at something in my room. Finally, after what felt like an eternity, he nodded and turned, shuffling down the hallway. I locked the door the second he was gone, my hands shaking as I tried to make sense of what had just happened. The next morning, I woke up to find a note on the kitchen table. "Had to check on the pipes," it read, scribbled in messy handwriting that barely looked like his. "Sorry for the late night visit." I wanted to leave right then, but I convinced myself I was overreacting. Maybe he really had just heard a noise. Maybe he was just concerned. But deep down, I couldn't shake the feeling that he'd been watching me for longer than I realized. That night, I put a chair in front of my door and slept with my phone in hand, just in case. And around midnight, I heard it again, that faint shuffle in the hallway, stopping right outside my door. This time I didn't open it. I sat there, barely able to breathe, listening as he stood there, not knocking, not saying anything, just standing. I left the next morning, barely waiting for daylight, packing my bags and getting out as fast as I could. Before I left town, I reported the incident to the rental site, thinking they'd take it seriously. But a few days later, out of curiosity, I checked. The listing was still up, with no mention of any complaints. To this day, I still think about that shadow lingering outside my door, and I wonder how many others have stayed there too, without ever knowing they were being watched. Each summer, I make it a point to travel somewhere I've never been. For me, exploring new places isn't just about getting away from work. It's a way to reconnect with myself, discover hidden corners of the world, and immerse in experiences that remind me there's more out there than my everyday routine. Last summer, I chose South America. I'd read about small, remote villages that seemed stuck in time, and I was curious to see what life was like in these secluded spots. After a few weeks of trekking through well-known sites, I finally reached a tiny village, tucked high up in the mountains, far from any city. It was beautiful, almost untouched by time. The streets were narrow, lined with cobblestones that had been worn smooth by centuries of footsteps. The buildings had that rustic charm, whitewashed walls with brightly painted doors, and flower boxes overflowing with vibrant blooms. I felt like I had stepped into a postcard. The villagers were warm and welcoming. They were friendly in a way that felt genuine, not the kind of friendliness you sometimes get in places overrun by tourists. Here, people seemed curious about me, and when I told them I was a teacher, their faces lit up with approval. It was a place where everyone seemed to know everyone, and their smiles made me feel like I belonged, even if just for a short while. My accommodation was a small room in a family-run inn. It was modest but charming, with wooden beams on the ceiling and a little balcony overlooking the village square. My hosts were lovely, a middle-aged couple and their teenage son who seemed thrilled to practice his English with me. I settled into the slow rhythm of village life, spending my days wandering through the hills, visiting the local market, and even helping the innkeepers with small chores. It was perfect. Except for one thing. There was an older man in the village, maybe in his late 70s, with deeply weathered skin and eyes that seemed almost too dark, too intense. He had this unsettling way of looking at me. Never smiling, never nodding, just staring. I noticed him on my second day, standing by the entrance to the village square. He didn't look away when I caught his gaze, just continued to stare, his face expressionless. I tried to ignore it, but there was something about his eyes that made me feel uneasy, like he was observing me with a purpose. On the third day, I saw him again. This time, I was sitting outside a cafe enjoying a cup of coffee when I looked up and saw him standing across the square, staring at me. I looked away, trying to focus on my coffee, but every time I looked up, he was still there. I considered mentioning it to the innkeepers, but I brushed it off. Small villages have their quirks, right? Maybe he was just a curious local, someone who wasn't used to outsiders. That night, as I was getting ready for bed, I closed the shutters and felt a strange sense of relief, as if I were closing him out along with the night. But sleep didn't come easily. I lay there, listening to the unfamiliar sounds of the village, the creaking of the inn with the wind, animals walking outside, and my thoughts kept drifting back to that man, to the way he looked at me as if I were the only person in the square. The next morning, I woke up early and decided to take a walk through the hills surrounding the village. It was beautiful. The sun lit up the scene with warmth, while the air was cool and fresh. I took my time, stopping to take photos, feeling grateful for the peace and solitude. But as I made my way back to the village, I saw something out of the corner of my eye, a figure lingering at the edge of the path, tucked behind some trees. It was him. He stood there, watching me. I tried to act casual, giving him a polite nod as I walked past, but he didn't respond. His eyes just followed me, dark and unwavering. My heart started pounding, and I quickened my pace, eager to get back to the safety of the village. When I returned to the inn, I mentioned the man to the innkeeper, a kind woman named Rosa. She looked at me with a slight frown, then nodded slowly. "That's Emilio," she said. He's been here forever. Doesn't talk much, just keeps to himself. He's harmless, don't worry." I wanted to believe her, but something about him didn't feel harmless. His eyes left this feeling like he saw way more than I wanted him to. I decided to let it go, telling myself I was overreacting, but the next few days were no better. Every time I stepped outside, I'd see him. At the market, near the church, even once outside the inn, standing just a little too close, just enough to make me feel vulnerable. On my last night in the village, I lay in bed, trying to get some sleep before my early departure. The inn was quiet, everyone else already asleep, and I'd close the shutters tightly, hoping they'd give me some sense of security. Just as I was drifting off, I heard it. A faint noise. Footsteps crunching on the gravel path outside my window. I lay completely still, holding my breath, listening as the footsteps grew closer and then stopped, right outside the window. For a moment, there was silence, and then a soft rustling. The sound of fingers brushing against the shutters, followed by a faint tugging, like someone testing the handle, trying to see if it would open. My heart raced and I sat up, staring at the window. The handle turned, but it didn't open, held fast by the lock. I wanted to call out to yell, but my voice seemed frozen in my throat. Then I heard a faint whisper, so quiet I could barely make out the words. "I just want to see you." That was enough. I grabbed my phone, dialed the innkeeper's number, and waited, my fingers trembling. The footsteps retreated, and within minutes, Rosa and her husband were knocking on my door. I opened it, my face pale, and told them what had happened. They listened, their faces darkening with concern. "You're safe here," Rosa's husband assured me, but his voice held an edge of uncertainty. I didn't sleep for the rest of the night, sitting on my bed with my bags packed, waiting for dawn. When morning finally came, I left without saying goodbye, walking quickly through the village square, hoping to avoid any last encounters. But when I was crossing the town's main square, there he was, standing by the path, watching me with that same dark, piercing gaze. He didn't say anything, didn't make a move, just watched as I walked away, his expression as cold and unreadable as ever. I continued my journey, but the experience left a scar on me, a sense of unease that wouldn't fade away. Whenever I think back to that village, I remember his eyes, the way they followed me everywhere, filled with something I couldn't understand. I still wonder what he wanted, why he chose to watch me so closely, and whether he was truly harmless. It was a reminder that even in the most beautiful places, there are hidden dangers, and that sometimes the people who seem the least threatening can be the ones to watch out for. Hostels are usually my go-to for traveling. I love meeting people from all over, and there's a certain vibe in hostels you don't get anywhere else. You're sharing space, hanging out in common rooms, sometimes cooking together. It's like a mini community. So when I planned a trip to Spain, I was thrilled to find a popular hostel. Travelers from all over seemed to love it, saying it was the perfect place to make friends and that the location was unbeatable. When I arrived, it didn't disappoint. The staff was super friendly, the place was colorful and lively, and they had events every night like group dinners and pub crawls. I was sharing a dorm-style room with six other people, a mix of men and women. Everyone was friendly, and I clicked right away with another girl in the room named Olivia. We ended up hanging out quite a bit, exploring the local spots together and exchanging stories from back home. One of our roommates was a guy named Lucas. He was maybe a few years older than me, mid-20s, with short blonde hair, kind of a laid-back vibe. At first, I thought he was just being friendly. He asked the usual questions, where I was from, where I'd been, how long I was staying. Typical hostel small talk. But over the next couple of days, I started noticing he was around a lot more than everyone else. While others would be out and about or chatting with different groups, Lucas seemed to always be around, watching, lingering a little too long in conversations, often with a strange sort of half-smile. One evening, after a long day exploring the city, Olivia and I were getting ready to go out for dinner. We were chatting by our beds, and Lucas walked over, hovering nearby. He didn't join the conversation, just watched us while pretending to be on his phone. I could feel his eyes darting back and forth, watching what we were doing. Eventually, he chimed in, asking if he could join us for dinner. I didn't mind initially, it's common for hostile people to tag along, but his tone was a little too eager, and his gaze stayed fixed on me. As we walked out, he started asking more questions, mostly directed at me. The questions came off as almost rehearsed, like he'd been thinking about them and just waiting for a chance to ask. I brushed it off, thinking he was just overly friendly, maybe a bit socially awkward. But after that night, things got weird. The next morning, I left early to explore on my own, but when I came back around lunch, there he was, sitting on the bed across from mine, as if he'd been waiting. He smiled, looking almost relieved when I walked in. "Hey, you're back earlier than I thought," he said, like he'd been timing my movements. "Yeah, just came back to grab a few things," I replied, trying to sound casual, though it felt strange to be explaining myself. "Oh, what are you planning to do later?" he asked, his eyes fixed on me with that same half-smile. I was careful to keep my response non-specific, saying I'd be meeting up with Olivia. But the truth was, Olivia had left early that morning to head to another city, so I was actually on my own. I didn't want him to know that. I didn't like how closely he was tracking my movements, like he was mentally cataloging everything I said. That night, I felt uneasy sleeping in the room. There was just something about the way he was around me, the way he seemed to appear whenever I returned to the room, even at odd times, like he knew my schedule down to the minute. The following evening, I came back from dinner with a few people I'd met in the common room. It was late, maybe past midnight, and the dorm was dark except for a little light filtering in through the window. Everyone seemed to be asleep, so I tiptoed to my bed, careful not to wake anyone. Just as I was settling in, I heard a faint shuffling sound. At first, I thought someone was turning over in their bed, but the sound was too close, too soft, almost like breathing. When my eyes adjusted to the darkness, I just froze up. There, standing at the foot of my bed, was Lucas. He wasn't doing anything, just standing there, staring down at me with that same strange smile. My first instinct was to pull the covers up, like a child hiding from a nightmare. But I forced myself to stay calm, even though my heart was racing. Lucas, what are you doing? He just kept smiling, that unsettling grin widening as if he were genuinely pleased to see me scared. I was just making sure you were okay. He finally said, his voice low and calm, like this was a perfectly normal thing to do. I didn't know what to say. It's the middle of the night, I whispered, struggling to keep my voice from shaking. Go back to bed. He didn't move at first, just stood there, watching me, and I could see his eyes tracing over my face, down to the blankets where my hand was clenched in a tight fist. I gripped the edge of the blanket, expecting him to reach out or make some sudden move, but he just stood there, grinning like he was waiting for something. Finally, he nodded, almost as if he were granting me permission to sleep. Sleep well, he whispered, then slowly turned and went back to his bed, crawling under the covers as if nothing had happened. I just lay there, feeling like time had stopped, staring at the ceiling, too scared to close my eyes. I couldn't keep up with everything going on in my head, trying to figure out if I'd imagined the whole thing or if he'd really been standing there, watching me in the middle of the night. The next morning, I packed my bags quietly, hoping not to draw any attention to myself. Lucas was still asleep, or at least pretending to be, his back turned as I slipped out of the room with my stuff. I didn't even bother with a formal checkout at the front desk. I just left, hailing a cab to the nearest train station and catching the first train to the next town over. Even after I left, I couldn't shake the image of his face, the way he'd looked down at me with that empty smile. I felt a strange combination of relief and lingering fear. The experience changed the way I travel. I still love meeting people, still enjoy staying in hostels and getting to know other travelers, but now there's a part of me that's always cautious, a little more guarded than before. And every time I stay in a new place, I make sure to sleep with my back to the wall, my suitcase packed and ready, just in case. If these travel tales made you rethink your next trip, don't forget to hit like and subscribe for more real-life chills. Which story left you the most unsettled? Let me know in the comments. I'd love to hear your thoughts. And hey, share this with a friend because everyone deserves a little reminder to stay cautious out there. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you in the next nightmare.
Don't you deserve a Medicare plan you can count on? Well, you can count on a Medicare Advantage plan from UnitedHealthcare. Enjoy reliable coverage and low out-of-pocket costs with a Medicare Advantage plan from UnitedHealthcare. And if you have a chronic condition like diabetes, chronic heart failure, or a cardiovascular disorder, you may qualify for a UnitedHealthcare Complete Care plan with plans that fit your life today and as your needs change tomorrow. Find out more about UnitedHealthcare plans at uhc.com/Medicare.